Email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
As a funeral celebrant, says Liam, I now find myself assisting people in writing their own eulogies before they die. One of the family will deliver the eulogy at the funeral, but if they don't feel up to it, I deliver it for them. The last message from the deceased. I've never heard of that before. That's Liam there. Thanks for that, Liam. 5 on 5 5 on ray@rte.ie. Now we're joined in studio by Colman Nochter, child and adolescent psychotherapist. I was in a bookshop the other day. Your book's in the top 10.
Yes. Yeah. Delighted.
Well.
Absolutely.
The 4 to 7 zone.
It's 3 weeks in top 10 now. It's fantastic.
Oh, congratulations on that.
Thanks very much.
Congratulations on that. Now, a couple of things before we get to our listeners' questions. You've been writing for a long time about too much competition in sport. And then the GAA must have been listening to you, because last week they announced a ban on all competitions for under 12s. You must be delighted.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in it because the discussions that have come out of it since. You know, so you'll always have people who'll say sport has gone soft and you're ruining this, and children need to have disappointment in order to learn a life lesson. And then you'll have others saying, no, it's about participation and inclusion. And you'll never get those two people to meet in the middle. You know, so there'll always be people who'll be put out by it. In my view, again, this is aimed at adults. It's not aimed at children. It's the adults, the coaches and the parents that this email that headquarters from Croke Park were saying, look, stop doing this. Because what was happening is Go Games has been around all the time. That is the rule. But people have been running these underground under-9s blitzes and elite under-10 competitions.
So Go Games, and it was mentioned loads of times in the last week, that's where they can't have any competitions. So that's been going for a long time.
That's been going for a long time. But I suppose the clampdown on it is to stop that. In my view, it is better to perhaps frustrate a 10 and 11 year old who's really sporty and competitive until they're 13 than to lose a load of 10 and 11 year olds by introducing it. So I've had many children sit in front of me saying I gave up sport because it was too serious. I never saw one child say they gave up because it wasn't serious enough. Do you know what I mean?
There you go. That's it. And you're at the cold face, so.
Yeah, pretty much.
And as I say, you've been writing about it and talking about it for a long time. You're not a Johnny Come Lately on it at all. I see Education Minister Norma Foley is bringing to Cabinet proposals for a landmark 5 million pilot to offer psychological counselling for primary schools.
Yeah, this is something they kind of mooted this idea last year. I've always said I think this would be a game changer. We need the presence of mental health practitioners in schools. The biggest problem is signposting. We have no primary care facility to signpost children who are at risk of developing a mental health problem really early. So when you can identify these children in schools, you can put the support in place in the school. There was a great presentation from a lady from Devon, Sarah Stockholm, over last year. I remember with the National Parents Council, and she was talking about a similar project that they run in Dorset. And it's just fantastic. Occupational therapists, all these teams of people that are able to do it. So on the face of it, fantastic. 5 million is a tiny amount of money. Yeah. If this is spread really thin and you get, you know, schools getting €180 each or something, you know, to get wellbeing books, it's going to be absolutely removed. So I think the idea is more psychology presence from the NEPs, and there's a wellbeing practitioner post.
What's the NEPs?
National Educational Psychological Service.
Oh yeah, right,
so
okay.
they would do a lot services.
What would it look like? Would it be somebody? Obviously, smaller schools wouldn't have a full-time person, but maybe a number of schools could share a person.
I think it'll be kind of district-based.
Yes,
so you'll have
yes.
a kind of a hub. And certainly the Dorset model is they would have 4 or 5 schools in their area, and they would call in if you were concerned about a child. They'd observe them in the class and be able to signpost them. Actually, that might be a learning issue. That might be a behavioural issue. That might be an emotional issue, which would be fantastic because then you
save. Can't expect teachers to be... They're not qualified to do that, although they're called on to do it all the time.
Absolutely, and absolutely unfair to expect them to be able to do that as well. And then again, the GP having to make that call, having seen this child for 2 minutes sitting in front of them, is really difficult as well. So in principle, this is a fantastic, and could be a game changer, I will say this, but only if it's invested in properly. And not spread too thin.
So 5 million, as you say, pilot provision of counselling at primary school level. It is intended that the pilot will commence September 23. So there's mixed messages there. Is it counselling or is it counselling? Right. So it's not available to everybody. You would have to ask for it or deemed suitable for it.
There's a lot of sketchiness on the details. But in principle, great idea. And we, you know, we're very critical of people when they get it wrong. So if there's something that they're actually doing that I think is good, I think we should say, you're on the money here. This could be good.
Right, this came in for you. Coleman, I have an only child who is smart but always had difficult behaviour. These days, he won't go to school. We don't know why. He just says he can't be bothered. We have said everything to him about his future, etc., but he does not seem to care. He says he's probably depressed. He likes going out with his friends but won't go to bed at night and is always tired in the morning. We've brought him to the doctor, who doesn't see any sign of depression. I cut his Wi-Fi when he's not at school, and I'm on the verge of cancelling his music apps and phone. We're on a waiting list for counselling. Please give advice. Now, it doesn't give an age there.
Yeah, the age is tricky. If it's a kind of a primary school child, I think you probably have more influence over that. I think it's a teenager.
I can assume it's a teenager there. Yeah.
Well, again, I would say, and I've been around loads of schools in the recent weeks and months, and absenteeism is a huge issue. You can't get young people back into school. Maybe a hangover from pandemic, you know, where they were told school isn't necessary, but principals telling me huge problems with absenteeism, right, and really struggles with school refusal. I don't like that term, but that's the
school refusal.
So children, again, whether that's not willing to go to school or not able, that's a really important distinction to make. You know, and again, how difficult to do.
Yeah.
Again, perhaps I wonder if there's been boundaries in place with this child all the way through, and maybe this is an extension of difficult behaviour, because we do need firm boundaries, like in terms of school is not a negotiable, it's an expectation. But if you're making a child and bring them to the GP where the GP saw no signs of depressive issues, that's good. That's a relief. But from a behavioural point of view, there has to be kind of some degree of sanction and an expectation that the child does something that's uncomfortable. And I think sometimes we can be very eggshelly about that in terms of not pushing children in that situation. But if it is a case of being unwilling, that's what's required. It is that kind of arm around the shoulder, but a nudge nonetheless in that way. If he's unable, and there is, but usually children will be able to identify it's the work, it's the teacher, it's the peers, but if it's I just want to stay at home.
End of term this week, right, for secondary schools. So what advice would you give to this parent about the new term? Should they be talking about it nearly from now and saying, we will be expecting you to go to school in September, these are the rules, blah, 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 so the child can internalise this over the next 3 months?
And again, if he's an older teen, and maybe there's a kind of a post-junior cert, it's you're not staying at home. If you're not going to school, you're going to get a job, or there's going to be a plan B in place.
Yes.
But absolutely having firm boundaries around what is expected of him, and what you will do should those things not be lived up to. You know, it shouldn't be an option to stay at home.
Okay, right. Yeah. Well, good luck with that in your lead. Coleman, any guidance from Coleman on mobile phones? I have a 12, nearly 13-year-old daughter in sixth class. Only a handful in her class haven't yet got a mobile phone. She's telling me she feels left out, as nearly everyone has one and they'll all be keeping in touch, but she can't and she hasn't got one. I'm holding off as I feel too much access to social media too young isn't a good thing. Any guidance? Of course, last week we heard that Greystones, all the schools in Greystones had got together and agreed that they wouldn't have any mobile phones, all the primary schools. So it was parents, teachers, school management, the whole thing. And it needs that sort of concerted effort, doesn't it?
It does, because in this situation, and like many, it'll be the peer pester power around, I'm the only one without it. And as a parent, most parents, 90% of parents give a phone with trepidation. It's against their better judgment, but they feel that they have to, for every reason that this parent is saying it. In terms of sixth class, to get to that point is good. You know, you've done well to hold off to this point. There is a kind of a natural assumption that it's almost like part of your confirmation that you get a phone now as part of that, and a rite of passage into secondary school. So maybe there is a time to introduce it, but I would always say, you know, it is introducing it with high levels of surveillance and supervision, because you're starting out a habit with this young person that they're going to carry into the next number of years.
I see the chief medical officer in America, I think her name is Murthy, has issued a report on social media and mobile phone use, and it's not good. Mm. And one of the things she says, which is interesting, because the tech companies say there's no evidence to connect poor mental health to social media and the use of phones. And what the chief medical officer is saying, well, there's no evidence to the contrary.
Yeah. And this is why this is so difficult, because it is a social experiment.
Yes. You know, and we're in the middle of it.
It's only 14 years old. The iPhone is only 14 years old. That was the game changer in terms of having handheld technology. So if you think the iPhone baby is only 14 now, you're really only starting to see the fallout of that. Throw in a pandemic in the middle of that as well, and you're.
But your common sense would tell you that it's harmful.
It is, but I think we concentrate on this kind of the cyberbullying and the pornography, and actually having to answer 16 WhatsApp messages before your Coca Pops in the morning. That's too much for a 12-year-old as well. Do you know what I mean?
And he's obviously, I'm not saying, but the teenager that was in the previous email, he's probably on social media until 2 o'clock in the morning. Then he's tired in the morning, doesn't want to go to school,
and sleep is a huge issue. But just for that parent, introduce carefully. Remember buying. And mobile phones like buying a puppy, the work only starts then.
Right. You know. I'm currently going through really bad anxiety with menopause, and my poor 13-year-old boys are also going through a lot. It's like I'm always on fight or flight mode, and they're always grumpy, which really makes me feel worse. Any advice? And I'm sure that happens in a lot of households where with adolescents and menopause, clash.
Yeah, I mean, again, you've got to give yourself some empathy in this situation. Do you know what I mean? In terms of this lady herself is struggling, and it's almost important that you own your own struggle and, you know, say, be open about that with the your sons and say, look, I'm not feeling 100% at the moment. I'm struggling, and it would really help me if you could help me out a little bit. It's absolutely okay to ask for that bit of a buy-in. It almost encourages them to have a sense of responsibility. But self-compassion here, like, in terms of you have to, self-care is really important in this situation. Like, burning yourself out by trying to keep everything going is not going to allow
you to. It'd be great
to
think that those conversations could be had, but I don't know if we've hit that yet.
From the menopause point of view, I think we're certainly up there. It's far more of a conversation now than it has.
I know,
been
but
before.
With a 13-year-old boy, probably.
You'd be surprised. 13-year-old boys can take on an awful lot more than we give them credit for. I think sometimes teenage boys are incredibly much more emotionally able than, and they're probably just not given the opportunity to be able to do that. But if you request someone to buy in and help me out with something, you're far more likely to get a better buy-in than saying, this has to stop.
Yes.
Because.
Yes.
Then you're seeing it as a
we're
kind of
all in
battle.
This together. Yeah. I'm feeling this way. You're feeling that way. Blah,
and
blah,
it does work. Like all the evidence would suggest, incentives work better than nagging.
Yes.
You
know? The carrot works better than the rod, or whatever the expression is. Have we got time for this? My 2-year-old doesn't listen, and when I say don't throw your bowl, don't throw water, don't touch this or that, I also have a baby, and she throws things. She doesn't take no for an answer. I'd love to know how to get her to listen. So there's two there, Joanna.
Yeah, there's a great suggestion.
Sorry, I've only 25 seconds. And I know, sorry, Joanna, about this. But.
Don't say, don't do that, don't do this, because you just put suggestions in their head what to do.
Right.
So reward them for not throwing the bowl rather than telling them not to throw it at
so
you.
So reward good behaviour.
Yeah,
there
but don't put suggestions, plant suggestions in their head about.
Don't think of the big white bear.
Exactly.
Polar bear, yeah. Okay, Colm and Octor, thanks so much. Colm will be back in a few weeks' time. That's it from us. Cormac is on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening. Sunny Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.